I don't know if you'll like them now, but if you had listened to them before you fell for Shawn Mendes, it might have been a different story.
Leave Shawn out of this, I told him with a smile.
I saw that poster in your room at your dad's.
Cale turned onto the highway as daylight was disappearing from the sky. He's the John Mayer of our generation, I argued. Cale snorted.
John Mayer is the John Mayer of our generation.
A few minutes later, he was quiet, and I was happy as we listened to music and drove down a long, curvy road I had never been on before. I would always remember the way the sun and moon danced in the sky that night, and what a sense of calm his silence had started to bring over my body. I listened to his voice when he asked me random questions that he had clearly put some thought into.
How many siblings do you wish you had? Which is your favorite character on Friends? How many times have you watched The Lion King? If you could have dinner with five people, dead or alive, who would they be? And why?
I was starting to get too comfortable with him, there in the front seat of his Bronco, and yet I could almost feel the chaos brewing somewhere nearby. Everything was going too well. I was totally lost in his world now, impressed and moved by every thought he had. I loved the way his tongue wrapped words up to sound pleasurable and profound. The depth of his thoughts and the way he spoke were incredibly attractive. His mind at work was so appealing to me. I thought I knew what connection was like, but watching it play out on a TV screen was nothing compared to real life. There's a joy here, a level of peace with Cale that I had not known in my 20 years on this earth. Being with Cale was like meditating. It was so good for my mind, and my soul felt better when he was around. He was lighthearted and heavy, both at home and away, biting whiskey and smooth wine. I loved the way he contradicted everything about himself. His purposeful silence, his wise youthfulness, his unexpected softness. He was a fascinating man, and I couldn't wait to learn more about him. We made it through an entire playlist and began to make a second one together. I quietly sang along to a Billie Eilish song that Cale told me was actually made for her brother's band, but was better suited to her voice. Cale knew so much about everything. We got to the restaurant early and sat in the car, talking through the next few songs. The place was a cool little Chinese restaurant with nicely decorated patio seating, hanging lanterns, and lush green plants covering the space. We were only 15 minutes from my house, but I had never noticed this place or the cute fragrance store next door. "This street is so charming." I saw my brother's name pop up on my screen. I thought about ignoring his call, but decided against it. "It's Austin. Sorry." I turned Cale's radio down and picked up the call. Music boomed through his side of the line, and his slurred words were tumbling through, becoming inaudible.
"Cale, come get me, please. Fuck Katie. Katie and her boyfriend that I didn't know she had. She said it was her ex-boyfriend, but they're trying to jump me."
Austin slurred his words.
"Care, please come get me."
I sat straight up in my seat.
"What do you mean? Who's trying to jump you? Where are you?"
Chaos. No longer brewing. It was here. Chapter 50. I couldn't say no. Austin gave me the location, and I asked Cale to drive me straight there. He put the address in his phone and pulled out of the parking lot, the restaurant lanterns fading in the background as we drove. Thanks to Cale's ability to drive in crisis mode, it took us only about 8 minutes to get there. I called Austin once a minute until we arrived, but he didn't pick up. By the time we pulled up, two guys were rolling around in the middle of the street. A red t-shirt and a black t-shirt were all I could see. There was a crowd watching. Another guy pushed through and hit the guy in the black t-shirt in the ribs. I recognized it was Austin as he grunted on the ground. I pushed past Cale, and he grabbed my arm.
"Stay here."
He put his palms on my shoulders and moved me a few feet away before he disappeared into the crowd. There were three trucks parked in the cul-de-sac, and about 10 people huddled together, cheering and booing. I tried to figure out where we were. The street was a row of similar houses, all quiet and with the porch lights on. There were a few people outside, yelling to stop the fighting and saying that they had called the military police. We weren't on post, but we were right outside the gate, so if the cops came, it would be military police, not civilian. It was the last place my brother needed to be getting caught fighting. I scanned my surroundings quickly, on my way to find Cale and Austin in the crowd. I shoved to the front of the adrenaline-fueled chaos, trying to reach Cale in the middle of the brawl. He pushed one of the guys off Austin, and Austin swung at him in the air. "Stop it!" I recognized Katie's voice before I saw her. I beelined toward her.
"Come on, Nielsen, let's get out of here,"
someone said in the background. A couple more lines of toxic encouragement were thrown out before I saw Cale block my brother from getting hit in his ribs again. I screamed. "Stop it!" Katie yelled again. I reached where she was standing, close to the fight, her face streaked with mascara tears. "What happened?" I asked, grabbing her by the shoulders. Cale was yelling Austin's name, trying to break up the fight. "My eggs and Austin!" She started crying hysterically. It was useless trying to talk to her, and I kept moving through the crowd. Sirens whirred through the air as Austin got his arms around one of their necks and brought them to the ground. Cale was shoving a guy with a bloody nose toward the crowd. They started to scatter, except Austin and the guy he was wrestling in the grass. One by one, the trucks pulled away, Katie with them. I locked eyes with her as she climbed inside the cab of one of the trucks. This had everything to do with her, and there she went, driving away from the storm. I yelled Austin's name as she passed, begging him to stop, to get up and get in the fucking truck. Cale grabbed Austin by the waist and tossed him to the side. He propped himself up on his elbow, sitting up, ready to go back at it. "Austin, stop!" I screamed again, desperate to connect with him, to snap him out of this before it was too late. If he got arrested again, he would be fucked. The siren cut off and the voices got louder. There was a small group of onlookers left outside now, mostly neighbors yelling and arguing all at once. It was complete chaos. Everything happened so fast. The MPs rushed out of their cars, heading straight for us. I screamed as they got closer, and I realized they were going for Cale. I tried to run toward him as my brother was shoved to the ground. An elbow or fist was flying toward my face, so I lifted my hands up to block myself and heard Cale's voice booming.
"Not her."
His voice shook me. When I couldn't see him anymore, I panicked. I didn't even know if I'd been hit or not.
"I was breaking it up. I don't have a weapon."
I heard Cale's voice again, and my eyes found him. I was no longer thinking about shielding myself. The only thing on my mind when I saw an MP reach for his black baton was Cale. The officer's focus was on him as the other two officers approached. Cale was on the ground and about to be blindsided as the officers got closer. His leg! He would have direct contact with Cale, and Cale wasn't the violent one here. Another scream rang through the air. It was a woman's voice. The officers turned to me. I looked at Cale again, then for Austin, who had found his way to the Bronco. He managed somehow to lift his drunk ass up inside and lie down, hiding from it all. While one of the officers stepped toward me and the others to Cale, I moved quickly, shoving myself in front of him. He grabbed me by the shoulders and tried to push me out of the way, but I put up a fight. "Stop!" I screamed, recognizing that I had been the one screaming the whole time. "Fucking stop! He didn't do anything!" My pleas finally got through to two of the MPs, who then stopped the one with his weapon out. The tallest of the officers cursed and shoved at his partner, and I wondered how the hell these power-tripping assholes could possibly be protecting anyone. I couldn't fathom why they were even going after Cale in the first place. "What the fuck is your problem? He wasn't even involved. He was trying to break it up. Give me your badge number or whatever I can fucking report you with." I shoved the shorter officer who was holding the baton with everything in me. He lost his footing and stumbled back. The other two were staring at me but weren't moving. I couldn't control my anger. I tasted salty tears on my tongue, and all I could think about was grabbing the baton from this fucker's hand and bashing his head in with it.
Karina, no!
Kale's voice brought me out of my blind rage.
Come here,
he said, softer this time. Everything was still blurry as it slowed down, but Kale was safe now, though limping to the curb, calling for me again. I went to him and sat a few feet away, catching my breath and trying really fucking hard to calm down. Kale's hands were holding the bottom of his pants tightly around his ankle. Are you okay? I asked him. I blinked away the tears that were stinging the corners of my eyes. I had dirt or something in them. Kale nodded.
Are you?
He had a cut above his eye, and it made murderous waves of anger flow over me to see him hurt. Yes, but you're not! I want to fucking kill them! How dare they come at you! He groaned, still rubbing his ankle. Kale's hands were visibly shaking as he lifted them up and balled them into fists. After a few seconds, he opened his eyes and went back to rubbing near his ankle. Do you want me to look at it? I began to offer.
No, I'm fine.
Kale stopped me in mid-sentence, yanking the pants all the way down to the top of his sneaker. He looked past me, then to my eyes.
They're coming. Answer their questions and try to stay calm. If you don't, it will only incite them further.
The three MPs were walking over to us, so I didn't say anything until they began their questioning. I thought about calling my dad, weighed the possible pros and cons, but couldn't bring myself to do it. I heeded Kale's warning and tried my best to stay calm. It was so infuriating and difficult, but I managed for a while.
Let me see some ID, soldier. So you're telling me you two just happened to show up here and you know the Fisher boy?
He's my brother. And like I told you, we came here to stop the fight, I snapped at them. Kale's hand touched my leg, gently squeezing. I again tried to be calm. While they wrote whatever bullshit down on their little notepads, I glared a hole through their skulls. Kale was silent, but I could feel that he wasn't okay. I had finally caught my breath, and the shock of it all was beginning to set in the longer we waited for them to continue their interrogation. Kale answered everything with an even tone, despite the situation and the fact that he did nothing wrong and was nearly fucking beaten by them. If anything, I should have been the focus of their animosity, having screamed and put my hands on an officer. That should have landed me in the back of a car pending an arrest. But no. No consequence for me. It was only about Kale. Apart from Kale, they seemed to be more interested in how we knew Austin than in the fact that Austin was the one who'd caused all of this. In that moment, I couldn't have cared less about my escape master brother, who needed to pay for his crimes. I almost told them where he was hiding. I was that mad. Kale sat there with such stillness. He barely blinked as he answered their questions in a controlled, flat, but polite voice. He refused to let them get the best of him, I assumed. I wished that one day I would be as emotionally disciplined as Kale. His eyes were steady, but somehow I felt that he wasn't as calm inside as he appeared to be. The cold night air made little puffs of smoke come out of all of their mouths. I decided that the three of them were now my mortal enemies, and I would never forget their names. Solomon, Kruger, and Deke. Especially Solomon, the troll-like man wielding a baton with an evil behind his eyes that enraged and terrified me. Give a man power and he'll rule, then ruin the world, my mother always told me. She was proving to be more right every day. The temperature had dropped significantly since we arrived. I had lost track of what time it was and how long we had been there. I was still in my work clothes, but my adrenaline kept me from being cold. I paced next to Kale as he still sat there, his legs extended in front of him. The other guy involved in the fight had already left without being questioned. It was only Kale's identification they had collected and scanned. Their awareness of Austin's name triggered a connection to our dad, so they didn't even bother to look for my brother. Nor did they seem to care who Austin's assailant was, and they didn't go after him either. When I quietly told Kale it wasn't fair, that this was all completely wrong and had to be against regulations. He explained that if I wanted to survive here, next to an army post my whole life, I shouldn't question authority, that it wasn't safe. Things were the way they were, and I wasn't going to change it.
If you want to fix things, go for something that's possible. Smaller. You're not going to change what's ingrained into American culture.
And that's it? You're just going to take it?
You know you're lucky that after putting your hands on an officer, you don't have a bullet in your head. If I had done that, it wouldn't be the case.
Kale's eyes darted from my face to the night sky, but when the men looked back at us, he was composed again. The questions continued, and Kruger rolled his eyes at me when I got choked up talking about the situation with my brother. He's getting mixed up with the wrong girl again, drinking too much, getting jumped by the not-ex-ex-boyfriend. He was scribbling down everything I was saying while holding a recording device between his middle and index fingers. It felt like hours had passed. My brother was lucky to have slid off. We were close to being able to leave the scene when the MPs put away their notepads and got back into their patrol cars. Kale stood up when they reversed and pulled away. I felt like crying as they left, and my chest heaved as their cars got smaller and smaller in the distance. I couldn't believe the way they behaved and the way they treated Kale. It made me shiver thinking about the way their American flag patches glowed under the bright streetlights. My throat was dry and on fire when we climbed back into Kale's truck. The empty street seemed spooky now, eerily still, as if nothing had happened at all. Everyone was gone, except us. Chapter 51. Are you sure you're not hurt anywhere? I asked Kale again.
I'm sure.
Austin was asleep in the back of Kale's truck with his mouth wide open. Or maybe he was blacked out. I didn't know for certain, and the only reason I even gave a shit was because I wanted to cuss him out. His face was gray, his lips dry, and his palms were a little bit clammy when I reached back to check them. He's an idiot. Why does he do this? I felt so exasperated.
I think he's more than drunk,
Kale observed. What do you mean? I lowered my voice so Austin wouldn't hear us if he woke up.
He seems like he had something more than alcohol. I've seen a lot of guys fucked up on all kinds of stuff. Mendoza's one of them. I know what I'm talking about, and this is more than liquor and weed. Mendoza doesn't do the shit anymore, but he was on pills for a while, too.
I looked back at Austin again. I appreciate your concern, but he's not on drugs. Weed, maybe, but that's it. I've seen him way worse than this. He's a professional partier. If he doesn't wake up by the time we get to my dad's, I'll wake him up.
Fine. You know him better than I do, and we've both had a long night.
He gave in as we pulled onto my dad's street. I wondered how long it would take for word to reach my dad. Days? Hours? I ended up waking Austin to have him sit upright while we drove through the gate. He managed to keep his eyes open long enough to have our IDs checked, and then he fell back asleep for the few minutes' drive to our dad's. I thought about taking him to my house, but I didn't want to look at his face right now, and really, I wanted Kale to stay over tonight. Kale swore he was physically okay, and half carried Austin into my dad's house and up the stairs. Kale had just tucked Austin into his bed when I shook my brother's shoulder. He opened his eyes and groaned, and Kale took over, asking him questions to check his cognitive awareness. When was his birthday? What was his address? Austin answered each one in a slurred version of his voice, using our dad's house as his address. Kale shined the flashlight from his phone over Austin's pupils and felt his forehead before standing up from the edge of the bed. Kale really did everything in life so thoroughly, even taking care of my drunken idiot brother.
You'll be okay, but you need to drink water tomorrow. A shitload. And lay off excess of anything. Trust me, man.
He leaned down over my brother. Austin smiled goofily at him.
Indulgence in anything never ends well. Get your shit together or you're going to fuck up your life.
Kale was serious, and his focus was on Austin's drunk smile turning into a sad one.
I know, I'm done drinking.
Austin said, followed by,
Gonna sleep it off. Drink water in morning.
His eyes fluttered closed. What was that about? I looked at Kale with harsh eyes as we walked down my dad's lawn. Austin was barely coherent and didn't defend himself or make excuses like he usually would have. My brother on drugs? He could barely afford to get his hair cut, let alone buy drugs and keep up with his love of alcohol and Chipotle.
I'm only trying to help, Kale said.
Well, don't. Or at least talk to me about it first before you say something like that to him again.
Really, that's what you're saying to me right now?
I was defensive, and Austin was my twin. He wasn't on heavy drugs. He knew better than that. He just drank way more than he ever should have and didn't know when to stop. I think it's best if neither of us talk, I said, trying to regulate my emotions, but not doing a great job of it. We got into his truck and kept conversation to a minimum. His brows were pulled, his eyes deep in thought. I knew my behavior was unfair, and I didn't know if I could stop it. I was hurt and embarrassed and not exactly great at controlling my acting out. Another thing to send my mom a thank you postcard for if I ever got an address for her someday. This wasn't Kale's fault. I knew that. I needed to grow the hell up and stop lashing out. I would break the cycle, even though it was really fucking hard. Regardless of our sticky relationship, Kale and I were friends, and I cared about and respected him enough to stop myself from doing what I would normally do, taking my hurricane of emotions out on everyone around me. He had been through enough. The MP nearly took a nightstick to his already injured leg. The scene had been horrifying, and the memory of it was 100 times worse. It had to be 1,000 times worse for Kale. But how dare I make this about me or Austin? It's so messed up of me to be rude to you right now. Let's not talk about my brother tonight. I'm sorry. You've been through a lot. I'm really sorry for the way I responded. I know you're coming from a good place, I reassured Kale, reaching for his hand to calm me. I hesitated with my hand hovering above his, tempted, but timid. His fingers reached up, wrapping around mine. They were warm and familiar, threaded through mine, and I felt grounded again. I didn't know if he would let go or not, but if he did, I would respect that and not touch him again. He didn't, though. He rearranged our fingers so he would drive safely, but he didn't let go. I'm sorry for all of this. Really sorry. I can't believe what just happened. You must be traumatized.
Enough saying sorry. I'm used to trauma.
He relied on humor to soften hard things, and it worked. I'm serious. You did nothing wrong. By standing up for my brother, you got forced into a shitty and dangerous situation. It's so fucked up how they have a little bit of power and they abuse it. We should have stayed at dinner and let Austin figure it out. You didn't have to rescue him.
That's my job. Literally, to protect the freedom of civilians.
He smiled.
He was being sarcastic, but his words were still somewhat true.
The irony wasn't lost on me. Do you really think that's what you're doing? In the army? I hesitated to ask, afraid that my words would come off as insulting. I didn't mean them that way, and I knew how sensitive of a topic this could be for him. If he didn't respond, I would change the subject and not pressure him. But if he did, I'd be grateful for the insight into his beliefs. He didn't answer right away, so I counted my breaths while he turned the truck on and blasted the heat. It was so loud and blew cold air that hadn't warmed up yet.
I can't speak for every single service member, but I know that I try to do what's right, with good intentions. When you put enough humans in the same place, there are going to be some bad ones. But in my case, I never went out of my way to hurt anyone. I never abused my power like some do.
The look on his face was one of a lost boy, a soldier away from war but still not at home. Nothing I could say would match the gravity of what he was saying. A simple thank you for your service wouldn't do. And you're still willing to die for the cause? I asked. He He lifted our connected hands to his lips. He kissed the back of mine, and I closed my eyes. A small comfort.
Yes,
he said. The word felt like a flame against the back of my hand. Please don't. I opened my eyes to see him staring through me.
It's not like I planned to, but there's...
I interrupted him by moving our hands to cover his mouth. Let's keep it at that, I begged. I couldn't think about him going anywhere except across the state of Georgia.
Deal.
He leaned back against the seat.
For now, at least.
I didn't want to read too much into his comment. It felt like a warning, so it made me pause, but I blocked myself from digging into it. I focused on him, on his warm eyes, his careful and calloused hand holding mine. Even inside of the eye of a storm, he could make me feel like I was safely planted. It was all about perception, and mine could have used a dose or two of reality. But instead of searching for the ground, I was floating in the sky with the brightest star of all. My mom's voice echoed in my head as I leaned over and kissed Kale. The brightest stars burn the fastest, so we must love them while we can. She told me that only once, but all these years later, I still remembered it. I touched his cheek with my free hand, running my fingers over his skin. The soft scar tissue above his eye, but below the fresh cut there, the harshness of his jawline. Are you okay? Really? I asked, loading the question this time with extra meaning. He laughed a breath through his nose and looked straight out of the windshield.
Maybe someday I will be.
Let's go home? I asked Kale, no longer wanting to pressure him with conversation. He nodded in agreement, and I hoped he would come in and stay the night of his own accord, without me having to ask. We drove home in the most peaceful silence. My eyes closed again, and by the time we made it to my house, I was dreaming of a place where I could keep Kale safe. Chapter 52. I don't know what I'd do without my job. It wasn't only about paying bills, although God knows there was that. It was about turning the key in the front door, switching on the lights, making sure we had fresh towels and were stocked with oils. Each little task took me out of myself and helped me connect to the world around me. I was sure of my skills as a massage therapist and proud of what I could do to help people disentangle the knots of their own lives. I needed that more than ever today, as I tried to disengage from the anxiety that hadn't gone away from last night. One minute I was listening to music with Kale, and the next I was being interviewed by aggressive military police. Molly understood why I was late. She had urged me to take the day off when I called to tell her what had happened, but I couldn't bring myself to do that. Kale didn't stay over at my house after all. He didn't even come inside. He woke me up, walked me to the porch, and touched his hand to the top of my arm as his goodnight. We were back to just friends now that the moon was replaced by the sun. He texted me that he had discharge appointments on post all day, and I guessed that meant he was getting closer and closer to his release from the army. He asked if I had to work today, and I told him yes, until late afternoon. He didn't ask what I was doing after work, so I didn't volunteer any more information. I was trying to keep things cool, even though I truly hated being away from him. I was already embarrassed from having called him while I walked to work. He didn't pick up, of course, and I left a nervous voicemail that I tried to delete but pressed the wrong button and sent it. I also couldn't stop constantly checking my phone between clients, and even once during a treatment for his answer. I took a few extra seconds after covering the client's eyes with a warm towel. And finally, halfway through my shift, I got a text from Kale. Very brief, and wanting to know if I had plans for dinner. I had texted my brother, too, trying to figure out what the hell happened last night. It was unbelievably stupid. He could have been badly hurt or arrested. And Kale was nearly assaulted by the MPs and risked ruining his good standing and discharge plans. I needed to make sense of why Austin had gotten himself in that situation over this girl. It was so stupid, I could barely stand it. I thought about going by my dad's and dragging my brother out of the house to interrogate him, but now that Kale was asking about dinner, I decided I'd much rather spend the evening with him than with my brother, or alone with a frozen pizza and a half bottle of wine. I'll come by tonight. If you want, come get me. How late will you be there? I was excited to read another text from Kale during my shift, but now disappointed to see that Austin wanted to come over for the evening. I was scheduled to work until 4, but I would slip out an hour early if I didn't have a walk-in by 3. Maybe I would have time to see Austin before having dinner with Kale. Kale texted that he wouldn't be finished with all of his meetings until after 5 anyway. I invited him to come over around 6:30 p.m. and offered to buy him dinner to even out his paying for my food the last time. I didn't have money for much, but we could order in something tonight, and the next time I got paid, I could take him to a nicer place. Next time. The words sent a shiver of a warning through me. I really, really needed to stay in the present with Kale, or we wouldn't fit anywhere at all. There was no future, and I doubted I would ever see him again after his discharge and the arrival of Elodie's baby. Philip would be home, and everything would go back to the way it was. I would be alone in my house again. While waiting for my next client to undress and get comfortable before their treatment, I texted my brother to confirm that we needed to talk and that he better not fucking flake on me. I was more tired today than usual. I hadn't slept very well after Kale dropped me off. For some reason, I lay in bed thinking only of the shitty things in my life. I didn't have a typical family or a loving boyfriend. I didn't have Instagram-worthy brunches with a big group of girlfriends. Not that I even really wanted that, but the option had never presented itself. But what I did have, for now, was Kale, and I started to reread his texts when I saw one from Austin, letting me know that he got a ride and was on his way over to my house. I would still be at work for at least an hour, but I told him my door was unlocked. Kale's by-the-books voice was in my head, telling me to keep my door locked at all times, whether I was gone or at home. He seemed way too concerned, but I had downloaded the neighborhood security app when I moved in, and it was pretty damn terrifying to get an alert every hour for a break-in or assault. Stolen dog, drunk driver, drunk soldiers, fighting at a bar. It was so overwhelming that I turned my notifications off after 3 days. I knew the world was a lot darker than I wanted to believe it was, but I still wanted to have hope that we didn't need to shut our doors and lock ourselves away from our neighbors and community. I hated the idea that I couldn't leave my front door open with just the screen between me and everything outside. I wanted to hear the sound of cars, people talking and connecting as they walked down the little strip of shops across the street, the roll of thunderstorms and the calm patter of the rain. Even honks and sirens were a part of the soundtrack of my life. Austin was sitting on my couch, shoes off, hat on. I had thought about what I would say to him as I walked home from work. He looked bright and awake, much different from the way he looked last night when Kale laid him in his bed. Austin pepped up when I walked in, grinning at me, already playing for my forgiveness. He was conniving back when we were 7, and even now, not much had changed. Well, our family had changed a lot. Our lives were turned upside down when our mother left us, and a woman we didn't know moved into our house before our mom even had a chance to come back. But Austin was still a brat. "How was work?" he asked. I stepped over his legs. He was sprawled across nearly the whole couch, and I maneuvered to the small available space at the other end and sat down. "It sucked. It was fine, but it sucked. What the hell happened last night?"
"It was a misunderstanding. I'll be fine as soon as I eat. What can you cook for me?"
I reached out to feel his forehead and rolled my eyes. "What can I cook for you? You should be asking, what can you, Austin, make for me? And that's not an answer to my question. I need details, and I need you to stop getting yourself and other people in trouble. Kale could have really gotten hurt, Austin. This isn't a game." He pouted for a second before nodding.
"I know, I know. Let me order food. I have $50. We can get pizza."
I shook my head. I definitely didn't feel like cooking, but my brother needed to eat. I wasn't going to let Austin leave here without him telling me what the hell happened last night. "I have dinner plans and you need to save your money. Let's make you something," I suggested. I stood up and waited for him to follow me into the kitchen. The sunlight pouring through the windows made that room at least 10 degrees warmer.
I have pasta and a few things in the fridge that are going to go bad soon. Let's use up what I have. I winked at him. You should save your money for a haircut. I pointed to his uncharacteristically long hair. I sort of loved when his hair was long, the opposite of a soldier, away from danger. Or was he? How did you get here, anyway? I opened the cabinet and pulled out a pot. I knew I had pasta in my pantry and tomatoes on the counter that were nearly too ripe. Martin dropped me off. The pot slipped from my hands and fell into the sink. Water splashed up at me. Martin? I turned the water off and looked at my brother. How? My brother rolled his eyes and looked at me like I was making a mountain out of a molehill by asking him that. I had every reason to, especially after last night. I called him to say sorry for being a shitbag last night. Austin was that way. He would put you in a crappy situation, but not entirely on purpose, and he would always actually feel bad about it. How did you get his number?
Mendoza gave it to me.
I sighed. My small circle was becoming more and more tangled. Are you and Mendoza close? I knew you were friends before, but have you stayed in touch? Austin nodded, and the screen door creaked. Elodie's voice chirped through the house, cutting the conversation off before my brother could respond.
Karina!
In here, I answered, as she came in, her face looking more tired than usual. I got home just in time, it's about to pour. She sat down at the table next to Austin, and he gave her a big smile.
We're making dinner, you hungry?
He asked her. I laughed, turning around to them. Correction, I am making dinner. For Austin. Pasta with, well, random stuff, but it'll be good. I turned the stove on to boil the water and started to dig through the fridge to see what random vegetables I had to throw into the pasta sauce. Carrots. Even though Austin was like a child when it came to food, if I chopped them up small enough, he wouldn't notice them. Hell, even if he saw me chopping them, he probably wouldn't notice. Austin and Elodie started basic small talk, how unpredictable the rain was and how the weather people never got the forecast right, that Austin had a headache and that Elodie's hands were starting to ache each day after work. The pain was increasing quickly, and she was a little worried. Austin touched the tips of her fingers, and she winced.
Sorry.
He let go, looking like a puppy who'd chewed apart a favorite shoe. It's okay, she assured him, verbally petting his head.
I have about 10 minutes until I have to meet Martin. He's with Julian and Gloria.
I turned around faster than I meant to, coming comically close to chopping the tip of my finger off. I set the knife toward the back of the cutting board, facing away from me. Martin, Kale, Martin? I asked her, somewhat puzzled. He told me he had meetings on post until 5, but he was with Austin maybe an hour ago. Now he's somewhere with Mendoza's wife and baby, and Elodie is going to meet up with them? Elodie nodded. He picked them up from home and dropped them off at the doctor. Kale's been spending all his time on post for his discharge stuff. I offered to take them home since Mendoza's on 24-hour duty. I haven't met Gloria, but I'm hoping to make mom friends.
Elodie's voice became more and more exhausted as she finished her sentence.
Oh, yeah. Gloria seems cool.
I turned back around and continued chopping the carrot, noticing that the water in the pot was beginning to boil. My mind drifted to Kale as Elodie and Austin started talking about some park she saw on Instagram. So Kale must have driven back and forth to help them out. Of course he did. I felt the little nudge between my lungs as I thought of how much I liked the softness of his actions and how they spoke infinitely louder than his words. I realized that Kale and I don't talk much about his military life day to day. It's more about the big picture of his life, but even then, the conversation is mostly focused on me. Elodie seemed to talk to Kale every day, and I wondered what he might have told her about us. I thought about mentioning to Elodie how often I'm hanging out with him. Hey, Elodie, Kale and I are friends, and we kissed more than once. I kind of want to kiss him again, but we're just friends. Okay, thanks. But since I can't even explain what the hell we're doing, there was really nothing to say to her. Elodie's loud laugh suddenly interrupted my thoughts. Clearly, I had missed one of Austin's jokes, but I noticed how he had managed to charm her.
The banter between the two of them was a pleasant distraction.
Mom friends in the army can be brutal. My mom got treated like shit by the wives around us. She hated it, that's for sure,
Austin told Elodie. It felt a bit too personal, a bit too vulnerable for him to say so casually in my kitchen.
It's hard. I just want them to like me. Is that too much to ask?
She whined, laying her forehead on the wooden kitchen table. She lifted it and gently put it back down, not actually touching, but pretending to bang the table a few times for dramatic effect.
I feel like I'm in primary school again, but this time it's worse, because I don't know anyone. They are speaking another language, and I can't even run home to my parents.
She sighed. I couldn't imagine Elodie not being liked by the women she desperately wanted to befriend. They were the only people who would truly understand her situation and be able to relate in a much deeper way. I was proud of myself for wanting my friend to be happy and loved and have as many friends as her little pure heart could hold. The thought of her happiness didn't make me jealous at all. Unlike my father, who needed to possess the people closest to him under the pretense of love. I tried really fucking hard to not be like him in that way. I wanted the things I love to flourish, uncaged and free. He made the mistake of marrying someone whose mind, body, and spirit were wild. She couldn't be owned, and he needed to collect things. While my mother couldn't be tamed, Estelle was primed to be a precious and pampered doll, a beautiful brunette with eyes for him and his world only, a prize he could display, polished and perfect.
What time is it?
Elodie asked, eyeing the downpour of rain through the window.
Gloria was supposed to be here with Julian by now.
Have either of you seen their baby? He's so cute.
Austin strummed his fingers on the table.
Only in pictures, Elodie responded immediately in a high-pitched voice. He looks just like his...
She stopped in mid-sentence and her face lit up. So did my brother's. Elodie's hand shot up into the air and waved. I turned to see who they were looking at as the back door opened. Cale stood, half in, half out, dressed in his uniform, his cap hanging out of his front pocket. I quickly ran through my appearance in my head. I was still in work clothes with frizzy, air-dried hair. Even though I'd planned to be a bit more polished when I saw him, when we made eye contact, my self-consciousness instantly disappeared. It was wild, the effect he had on me. All of the spiraling thoughts slid from my mind as he took a step forward, and a small child walked in behind him. The boy had dark hair, wet from the rain. He was as cute as Elodie and Austin had gushed, and Mendoza's wife Gloria followed behind him. She was beautiful. Of course she was, and radiant despite the dampening rain. She had big, dark eyes and thick, long hair. She was dressed in a white turtleneck tucked into dark jeans. Her jeans were baggy on her frame, and her smile oozed confidence and sweetness, almost as if she was an old friend, though I had never spoken to her.
Hi! Elodie addressed the child first. I'm Elodie!
She was using a baby talk voice, and the boy smiled brightly. Okay, he was actually the cutest child I had ever seen. He looked so much like Mendoza, but also like his mother. Big, bright brown eyes and thick lashes. Austin stood up to hug Gloria, and I waved awkwardly. It was clear that Austin knew her well by the way he smiled at her, and the fact that he wasn't hitting on her. My kitchen felt smaller than ever as Gloria glared at Austin and playfully hit his arm.
I heard you got Martin smoked today for what you did last night. Get your shit together!
She spoke to my brother like a sibling. What Gloria said took a few seconds to hit me. Cale had been reprimanded and humiliated, publicly, at work, but wasn't going for my brother's throat? I guess no one was immune to Austin's charm. I was used to seeing women, even myself, hover over him and contort themselves to accommodate his varied behaviors and volatile personalities, outwardly strong, yet sometimes extremely fragile.
I know,
Austin whined and ran his hands through his messy hair.
I'm sorry, truly. I'm not going near that girl again, he promised all of us.
When his eyes landed on me, I mentally cussed him out in hopes that the whole twin telepathy thing would work.
You better. Are you coming over to grill with us?
Gloria asked Austin.
Hell yeah,
he he responded without hesitation. You can come too. Gloria was looking at me. We're going to chill at our house if you want to join us. It felt nice to be included, but I really didn't want to be around anyone other than Kale today. I didn't know how to respond in a way that wasn't rude. I wanted to keep open the chance of being invited again. My brain was failing me, not coming up with the words fast enough when Kale spoke. He was answering Gloria, but his eyes were on me.
Actually, we have plans, and we can't move them.
He shrugged and looked at her.
Next time, then.
Thankfully, Gloria's smile was just as warm as it was when she arrived. I nodded to Gloria, tentatively accepting her future invite. I would be sure to thank Kale for saving me from my own social awkwardness when they left. Honestly, I wanted them all to leave, even adorable little Julian. I wanted to be alone with Kale. Chapter 53.
Sorry, Care. Next time dinner's on me.
Austin gave me a hug and said another quick sorry against my ear. He was out the door before I could respond. I waved goodbye to Gloria as she left carrying Julian. Elodie double-kissed me and gave me a puzzled look before opening her umbrella and following Gloria out of the house. As their voices trailed off, Kale shut the door, locking not only the main door, but the screen door, too. Just like that, the kitchen was empty. Are you keeping something out or locking me in? I asked him, sarcasm coating my voice. He laughed and brought his gaze to meet mine. I nearly squirmed when he focused in.
Both.
I couldn't move the smile from my face, and Kale's doubled in size, bigger than I'd ever seen. Finally, a level 10 smile from Kale Martin. I won! I didn't know what, but in my head there were buzzers going off and neon signs saying, Winner! And I knew that something special was mine. We stood there for a few seconds, taking each other in, the rain outside filling our silence. Kale's eyes went from my scalp to my socks and back up to my face before he spoke again.
Hi.
Hi. I smiled a smile that was so big that I couldn't close my mouth, even when I tried.
How are you?
He asked, nudging his shoulder to mine. I'm okay. How are you? You seem pretty happy for someone who got smoked today. My brows drew together. I nearly apologized for my brother again, but Kale's voice in my head stopped me. His smile stayed as he replied.
It's done now. I needed the exercise anyway.
He laughed, and I felt relief and guilt at the same time. Kale,
If you say sorry, I'm going to... Well, I don't know what I'll do exactly, but don't apologize for your brother.
He told me, in a voice so patient that I couldn't help but nod in agreement. His face was freshly shaven, and his thick eyebrows were perfectly wild above his bright eyes. He was still grinning. Something about him felt different, lighter. I was confused, but so happy to be this close to him. Did you have a lot of meetings today? I asked, shuffling my soft socks against the tile floor.
I did.
And played taxi? He nodded.
A lot of driving. How was work?
He asked, turning the conversation back to me. It was okay. Same as always, I told him, feeling the floodgates open in my mind. I tried to hold them up, but knew it was a lost cause. I was bored, honestly. I'm starting to feel a little distracted at work. Kale's brow lifted.
Distracted? How so?
I felt my cheeks flush and my heart began to pick up speed. You distract me. Just life. I told half the truth. Kale was good at reading me, so I looked away from him and stared at the boiling water on the stove. I had wasted my time cooking for my brother. Typical.
What were you cooking?
Kale changed the subject. He was looking at the skillet of food on the stovetop. Kitchen sink pasta, my specialty when food in the fridge is about to go bad. I waved my arm in the air. For Austin, but he left, so I might as well not even finish it. K
Kale took a step toward the hot skillet.
I'm starving. I didn't eat anything today because I was too busy.
Oh, you don't want to eat my cooking, trust me. Didn't you want to get dinner somewhere? He shrugged.
I'm easy. I'm good with staying in if you are. And this smells really fucking good, honestly.
A tiny compliment, and my confidence was soaring. I pointed to the simmering pasta sauce. Why don't you try it first?
It can't be that bad,
he teased, grabbing the ladle from the counter. He dipped it into the sauce and managed to make such a simple act insanely attractive. I wouldn't be so sure, I confessed.
I've eaten MREs.
I remembered my dad bringing home a spaghetti-flavored MRE for my brother and me to try after his first deployment. It was such a novelty to see food made out of powder, and Austin and I got so excited. For years, I tried to hold that fond memory with my father as close as I could. I almost told Kale about it instantly, but I didn't want to bring down the mood by talking about my dad. I smirked as he brought the spoon to his lips for a second time.
It's really good. Let's eat this.
If you're sure. I shrugged and turned off the burner. After the day you've had.
Who said I had a bad day?
Kale asked, stepping closer. He put his arms on both sides of me and leaned in. His face was inches from mine. Would it be weird if I kissed him? Will he remember kissing me when he's back in his hometown, beginning his new life? Would he miss me? Would he remember me at all? The thoughts hurt me. I couldn't recall what he had just said to me. I was too distracted by how close he was.
I've been smoked before. Everyone has. I'm taking this as a farewell from the army. Plus, look how my day has turned around.
He licked his lips, and I mirrored his action without a thought. You promise you're okay? I asked one last time.
Me?
He tapped his chest with his finger. It landed on his rank badge, front and center. I nodded. My throat was dry as a bone. Yes, you. After yesterday, after today, in general. I really hope you're okay, I said, meaning it. He smiled again.
I'm fine. Are you worried about me?
He asked playfully. I shook my head, avoiding eye contact. He dipped his head down to make my eyes meet his.
Karina, I think you are worried about me.
The kitchen, my very small kitchen, felt as if it were shrinking by the second. I mean, I was worried, yeah. Last night was pretty damn intense. I feel like you should run away from me as soon as you can before something worse happens to you. He smiled and chewed his lip again. The scar above his brow had darkened. I noticed the change of color. Some days it was more raised, others more purple. The cut he got last night was less pronounced today. I felt a little relief.
I've been to war twice before the age of 21. I can handle MPs, and Austin is, well, Austin.
He sounded like he knew my brother well, and once again, I felt left out.
Karina, Karina, Karina.
He sang my name. There was a softness to the way it sounded that made me want to close my eyes. So I did. Kale's voice carried on.
You keep apologizing for things you didn't do. I thought we were going to stop doing that,
he teased. I loved this mood he was in. I wanted to stay in a cloud of it forever. I was blissful long enough to get addicted, enough to crave it again until reality caught up with me. What was I doing? Literally, what the hell was I doing? I opened my eyes, closing the curtain on my daydreamy moment with Kale. I somehow managed a voice. You sound like my old therapist.
Is that a good or a bad thing?
I thought about it for a second. Both.
Well, if I were your therapist, I would surely advise you to stay away from men like me.
I watched him as he nodded and inched closer to me. I wished I knew where we stood.
Far, far away,
he whispered. My eyes grew wider as he neared. His mouth was saying the opposite of what he was doing. Something inside me burned to know more, to know everything about him. And what if I don't want to stay away?
It's wise advice. But you're the one paying the bill, he said.
It sounded like a warning, so I moved my head back, putting a little space between us to think straight. What exactly is it that I'm staying away from? I asked. An upstanding citizen who drives women and their children home from the doctor and goes to war to fight for our country?
A man who has no capacity to know what's right or wrong anymore. Someone who tears things apart.
He paused, and I could feel his warm breath flush against the apple of my cheek.
And doesn't stay to put them back together.
Kale's fingers were warm when they caressed my chin, tilting my head to see his full face. His breathing slowed, and the air between us became more serious. The stakes were growing with each second that passed.
A man who's a killer,
he whispered. Adrenaline shot through me, and I held his eyes. I don't know what to say to that.
You don't have to say anything.
Kale's eyes were on my lips as I nodded. He kissed me the way I've only read about in poetry. I now understood what all the poets and writers complain about when they lose their love. This was that feeling they all chased, missed, remembered, would die for another chance to feel again. His lips opened and his tongue slid across mine. I would never forget this kiss. It was now a part of my DNA. The intensity of emotion, a rush unlike anything else I could explain. I wondered how anyone could possibly live after feeling this even once. Kale's hands lifted me up onto the counter, and my legs opened and he stood between them. His hands gripped the tops of my thighs as he devoured me, body first, then mind. His ACU jacket was crunchy between us, but I could still feel his heart pounding as I put my hand on it, next to the pocket. The way his heart danced under my palm felt like he was playing a song made just for me. This connection with him, this consuming connection, was otherworldly. I had never desired to be this close to someone before, not even when I was a teenager and confused infatuation with love. Pages of all the romance novels I had read, every scene from the dozens of rom-coms, all flicked and fluttered in my mind. They finally made sense. His hands were pressing against my back, holding me to his chest. My mouth and entire being were docile in his hands as they cupped my ass, my hips, my neck. Whoever he was, and whether or not I ever found out, wasn't on my mind as I kissed him for the second, third, then the 10th time. He carried me to my room, never letting his mouth leave mine, and I used my foot to slam the door behind us. I ignored the little bell going off in my head, reminding me that I shouldn't fall for this soldier. My body ached, begging me to give in to its desire, and as he landed us on my bed, I let my mind go mute and allowed myself to lose control for once in my life. Chapter 54. The heat and the sun woke me the next morning. Its brightness came with the dawn of a new way to begin my day, with someone else here. At first, I was confused when I woke up with Kale, his body running his usual insanely warm temperature. My little room was hot and steam filled the windows. My cheeks flushed with prickly heat, and I looked at him next to me. His eyes were closed, and his lips were ever so slightly parted. He was still in his pants and boxers. Only his t-shirt and jacket were missing. He proved to be a gentleman who didn't even try to sleep with me. I couldn't decide if that was a chivalrous thing or an insult to my ego. Although we hadn't slept together, it had been the best night of my life. I was grateful for his eyes being closed, as I couldn't stop smiling like a love-struck idiot. I really was a goner. This was going to end horribly. He was so beautiful, thoughtful, gracious, kind, and brilliant, and all of that overpowered the horror of not having a future with him. People my age hooked up all the time. Why was my brain acting like we had exchanged vows just because we shared the same bed? Being greedy with our limited time, I used the tip of my finger to trace around his chin. The squareness of his jaw was an art form in itself. As I studied his face, I noticed it was marked with little scars. Every one of them made me curious to know where it came from. The one above his eyebrow was deep, along with the one below his lip. I touched it gently. The skin was soft and puffy. Kale rumbled a little and turned his cheek, mumbling something about rocket ships. Kale draped his arm around me, pinning me to the bed. There was something incredibly safe feeling about being with him physically. I couldn't understand it, but the world seemed so far from us. My walls felt 10 feet thick, my house made from iron and stone, not brick and drywall. I wondered if I should wake him up. I didn't know what time it was, but since I didn't have to work today, I craved a few more minutes with him in the silence. There were so many things I wanted to do, and they all involved Kale. I hoped Kale didn't have another full day of appointments. I really, really didn't want my dreamlike time with him to prematurely come to a screeching, lonely halt. I continued to stare at every feature of his face, his bare chest, the tattoo on his forearm, and the nearby deep scar in the perfect shape of a bullet hole. I shivered and hoped I was wrong about that one. Thinking of him hurt was overwhelming and scary. I tried to analyze how it could be possible to feel this connected to another person after such a short stretch of time. How did I live before this? How would I after it? It was going to be so much worse when he left, now that he'd stayed the night with me. There wasn't a dull moment the entire night, and as our voices had quietly filled my room with our secrets, I finally realized how insanely rare it was to meet someone who understood me. When Kale opened his eyes, my endorphins rose, and I smiled back at his sleepy, so swoony grin. He buried his face in my messy hair and groaned, pushing his body against mine. Did he want to kiss me again, or was he hiding in embarrassment? My heart pounded as he lifted himself up and faced me.
"Hi,"
he spoke softly. His voice was tired and deep. "Hi," I whispered back, wondering what the sun would bring. Kale didn't say anything. My paranoia began to grow. "I'm sorry if..." He rolled on top of me, his arms on both sides of my head. He dipped his head down to look at me. With his mouth, Kale erased my doubts and thoughts as his lips moved down my jaw, across my collarbone. I closed my eyes. After having an uninterrupted night with Kale, I wanted 1,000 more. I wished we could stay in my bed for a week straight. I tried to savor every second we had, to make sure I would have something lasting to hang on to when he wasn't around. When my thoughts started to spiral again, I began to count the number of times Kale breathed in a minute. I pressed my hand against his chest the way I did once before, so I could feel his heart beating. His tongue made a line from the base of my throat and back up to my lips. I groaned as he gently opened my mouth with his and kissed me again. I lost count of them. Each one was somehow better than the last. It could have been minutes or hours before he gently pulled away from my mouth and kissed my forehead. I ran through the endearing things I'd learned about him last night. He can't stand the sound of trains and loves hard candy, but has never had a cavity in his life. That the only toothpaste he uses is cinnamon. Not only does he hate the smell of peppermint, which I knew, but also the taste. He doesn't like sports and has never watched an entire football game start to end. His favorite season is winter. Kale opened up like 1,000 novels written just for me, and I longed for the chance to read them all.
"What's going on in that head of yours?"
Kale kissed against my neck. "That you're a library."
"A library? Is that a good thing?"